This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon producing the operation. You can hear Logan actually after the Royals game and Vern as well tonight. You just can't get enough, man.
Can't get enough. Got to get in front of a microphone.
What are you going to do in the downtime?
Take a nap? I don't know.
Take a nap.
Eat lunch.
Take it here.
Play some video games. Do something completely unexciting.
I've actually slept here before.
You slept here? Okay.
Well, Kramer and I had like post game to like 2 or 3 a.m. one night or something. Logan, and I was with Kling the next morning.
I was like, what?
I was with Kling next morning. So Obviously you get here about 4:30 or 5 anyway. So, you know, what's the point of driving and then coming back? You know what I'm saying? Because you don't want to fall asleep. Because if you fall asleep, you're screwed. So just go to Quick Trip, get a Mountain Dew or something, and boom.
There have been some times where I've considered it during my radio career. There were some times. We did a radiothon in Springfield.
You'd have to.
Man, it was 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and then you turned around and had to do a 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. the next day, 24 consecutive hours on air, where you definitely thought about it, or some of those days where I was working till like 9, 10 o'clock at night and then had to be back in the office at 6 a.m., it's like, do I really even want to drive home? But my house was like 15 minutes away from the station, so it just didn't make sense to
make it nice and easy.
Yeah, sleep on the floor or something.
All right, pleasure to be joined now by a guy who's, well, there's been 11 races in NASCAR, top 10 in 8 of them, 7 times he's been top 5, 2 wins this year as well. He's also won twice at Kansas Speedway. Talking about Kyle Larson. What's up, Kyle?
Hey, how are you guys?
Hey, we're doing good, man. So you're going to be throwing the first pitch out at Kauffman Stadium in a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I haven't done that in a while, but
it's not easy.
My daughter turned 7 yesterday and she wanted to have a little baseball party. So we had a little scrimmage baseball game with her and her friends. So I got to throw the ball a little bit.
You know, it's one of those things too, Kyle. It's like, did you practice the distance you'll be throwing? Are we throwing from the hill or will you move up a little bit?
I mean, if they let me throw from the hill,
okay,
I feel like that's what you have to do. So
yeah, but you know how it is. He bounces it. It's going to be social media and all that. You know how that works.
Yeah. I don't think I'll get too out of control though, like some of them. So,
well, it is cool to have you out there at Kauffman Stadium. You a baseball fan at all?
I would say, yeah. I mean, I'm a fan. I don't get to follow like every game. I mean, they play a ton, but
yeah.
Especially when the playoffs roll around, I think, playoff baseball is super exciting. So, yeah, love watching that. And that's usually, you know, when my time of the year kind of is slowing down too, where I'm not racing so much dirt racing and I can, be at home on the couch watching or whatever.
Cause you like racing anywhere and everywhere, Kyle. It's kind of how you're wired. And big thanks to NASCAR too. And Matt Humphrey, you guys are awesome. We love having you on. We love having the Speedway right here in Kansas City, having 2 races a year. This is unbelievable. I've always wanted to ask guys though, Kyle, and especially, you know, guys like you kind of at the top of your profession, like PGA players, it's tough on them, but they don't travel as much. Their caddy goes, they bring a couple bags of clubs and everything. But here you are throwing out the first pitch at Royal Stadium. You guys have sponsorship appearances and stuff to do during the week. Do you get to go home for like 48 hours or anything before you head to the next track?
Your typical kind of week is if you're only doing NASCAR, you know, Cup Series racing, your typical week would be you fly to the track on Friday or fly to the state that you're racing on Friday. If you don't have any other, you know, media obligations earlier in the week where you go earlier. But we'll practice and qualify Saturday, race Sunday, and then you get home late Sunday night. Usually have meetings on Mondays, and then you have, you know, whatever, you know, you're doing to prep for the week ahead the next few days. But for me, I'm a little different because I race, you know, a lot of dirt track stuff outside of NASCAR. Yeah. So I'm usually hopefully home, you know, one day a week, especially this time of year. I stay pretty busy, but I like it that way, you know, being active and being in competition a lot, you know, I think keeps me sharp. So I prefer to do that, but others kind of have their own way of going about things.
Kyle, I was driving in the day and someone was in the fast lane going like below the speed limit. It drives me nuts when people are doing that. And I once asked Joey Chestnut if he can go to a baseball game and just eat a hot dog because dude can eat like 80 of them in 10 minutes. What's it like for you actually like being on a road, like trying to drive like normally because you're used to going fast and you're always racing everywhere?
Yeah, that's a valid question that we get a lot. You're going what, 70 to 80 miles an hour probably on the interstate. Where, you know, on the racetrack, we're going 180 to 200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So you would think that the sensation is like crazy different, right? But really the sensation comes from the flow of the traffic. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, if you're going 70 on the interstate and somebody goes ripping by you at 80, or there's a few people that go, like, it feels like you're going a lot faster. So, I don't get the feeling ever of like, oh my gosh, I'm crawling on the road because you're just going to go in the flow of the traffic
It drives me nuts. I don't know how you guys do it. I was sitting there going, I wonder what Kyle Larson does here in this situation, because it drives me nuts when someone's going slow. What about Kansas Speedway that you do so well at Kyle, because you've won twice here. Obviously it's been a good track for you in the past.
Yeah, no, it's a great track for us and I really enjoy it. It's probably in my top three or five favorite tracks that we get to go to throughout the year. For one, I love the area. I love the state. I love the race fans here in Kansas and in the Midwest. But then the racetrack itself, yeah, it's got progressive banking. You can kind of, you know, there's multiple lanes to run at the track. So you can kind of, you know, if you catch somebody, you can move around and pass them a little easier than some of the tracks we go to. So, it's just fun, and our car is always fast here, so I enjoy coming here and racing, and we're usually up front, which is nice.
I'm curious, Kyle, because with this generation of car, we've seen some crazy finishes like the one a year ago where you just beat out Chris Buescher. NASCAR just announced the rotation of the championship race going forward. Is Kansas a place that you think could or you think would be fitting to have a championship race at in the future?
It would definitely produce a great race for the finale. Just the only problem is, you know, geographically, November in Kansas, I feel like would probably be a little iffy on weather. So that makes it tricky for our series and picking tracks to race at. You know, you kind of got to go to states that you can be a little more confident that the weather's going to be okay. So, you know, Florida or the West Coast, Arizona, California, you know, potentially like Texas, probably not even Texas, but Kansas, I don't know. I just think, you know, you'd hate to see it raining or snowing or freezing temperatures, right, or whatever, and, you know, delaying the race or anything like that. But it would for sure be the best, probably, racetrack. I would say Kansas or Homestead would be the best, you know, quality racing to decide a champion.
You mentioned, you know, your schedule and how busy you can be. I'm curious, with you trying to do the double again this year with the Indy 500 and the Coke 600, does it make your schedule, does it make you feel like your schedule is any more hectic with all the things that you have to do in terms of going back and forth in that week in particular, or does it just feel like relatively similar to what you're used to with going to different tracks and doing different races throughout the season while also managing your regular cup schedule?
Well, honestly, I think for your a normal guy doing the double, it might be busier, but for me, it's really not. It's kind of opposite. There's less back and forth than you think. You know, like I'll race here at Kansas this weekend, and then I'll head to Indy Sunday night, and then I'm there, you know, Sunday night through Sunday, I think, where, you know, then I'll go to North Wilkesboro to run the All-Star race and then come back. And then I'm back in Indy for pretty much the whole week, and then go to Charlotte on Saturday, practice, qualify, come back to Indy, race, go to Charlotte and race. Where, you know, a normal week for me, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm gone early in the week, you know, racing dirt races, you know, sprint cars and stuff. So for me, the 2 weeks that I'm in Indy is like the only time all year where I'm actually in the same spot for multiple days in a row. So it's actually pretty nice for me and really relaxing. That was, you know, surprising last year for me. And then I think for everybody, when I described it to them, that like my schedule was way easier last year than it typically is throughout the year.
Have you ever thought about F1, Kyle? Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs is invested as a part owner in an F1 team. I know that would be challenging with your schedule, but I'm just curious because you do like to run everything. Have you ever considered that?
Well, I mean, no, because realistically, I'll never have an opportunity to race in Formula One. The FIA makes it really difficult to even get a license to race. So you have to like earn points to get a license. And, I think the FIA doesn't think very highly of American auto racing. So you don't get the opportunity to gain points to even qualify for a license. And then even if I did, like, that's not my background. So it would be difficult for me to get a ride, and you're not going to be in a top ride or anything like that. So no, I don't think I would ever get the chance to do it. But you know, it is what it is. That was never really my dream either. You know, growing up, my dream was always to, you know, race in the NASCAR Cup Series and, you know, someday down the road, compete full time in a nationally touring sprint car series. So, I'm pretty content doing what I'm doing.
You just like to drive. That's awesome, man. You like to do this in your spare time. Good luck today with the first pitch out of Kauffman Stadium. Yeah, I mean, it's good that you practice too, because again, social media can be the devil sometimes.
Well, if I screw it up now after practicing, that's going to look really bad. So hopefully it goes smooth for me.
Good luck, Kyle. Enjoy your time in Kansas City. Good luck at the race this weekend.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
There you go. Kyle Larson right there with us.
Good stuff. You know, I think he's, in terms of the racing side of things, somebody mentioned on the text line real quick before he transitioned, Bink, that somebody said that he could be, that Mike Joy, of course, the guy that does the Fox broadcast, you'll be able to hear him if you're not going to the race on Sunday, that he could be one of the top five drivers of all time, like, period. And based on what he's been able to do in terms of the racing in different series, like Christopher Bell does a little bit of that as well, I think NASCAR is interesting because they, similar to how the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, like, hey, man, we don't want you doing too much during the offseason. Like, you need to take care of your body. We need you ready to do your job for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Stewart used to do that too,
you know,
all the time.
I think that's NASCAR's in that frame of mind, I think, where some people, like Rick Hendrick historically, has been like, yeah, I don't want you doing anything but racing for my team. I don't want you doing any extra. Where Kyle Larson has bent that rule a little bit with Hendrick and going out and doing the sprint races, obviously, which he's the dirt races, which he's so good at, as well as Christopher Bell. Really good stuff. So thank you for getting a driver on, Bink. I know we were working on it. It's nice to be able to get somebody.
Well, Tony Stewart used to race a lot of these dirt races too. Like, he just likes to race. Like, do you think downtime, they'd want their downtime? He likes to go race some dirt races. Yeah. And sometimes they use fake names when they go do it.
Some drivers are just all about the grind. Like, you know, some guy, like if you hear a guy, this guy just loves football, you know?
Oh, it's a love racing guy.
Very, 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 very similar in that regard. Logan, we got to get you out to a race, man, because I think that it's a lot different from watching than actually going. And even if you're not fully interested, I think the fan experience that you get at a racetrack, and Bink, I think, can back me up on this, is as good as you'll see in any sport at all in terms of, like you said, being able to go to, being able to like race the little cars. Mm-hmm. They've also got the sims now at the track where you can go and do a sim lap around Kansas. They've got the haulers there with all the gear and stuff. There's meet and greets with the drivers. You get to bring your own beer, bring your own whatever, and it's not a problem. You know, you can bring whatever you want to at the races. I think it's, and it's more affordable than your traditional football game or anything like that. So in terms of the actual experience of going to a race, it's pretty freaking awesome being able to feel like the thunder in your chest a little bit, you know, and see those cars do what they do.
It's been a while. I don't think I've been to a race of that magnitude. I mean, a sprint car race or, you know, an actual NASCAR race ever. I went to Nationwide races when I was little, so I'd have to take a look at it. But even those Nationwide races, you would get a good crowd together for something like that. I went and watched a couple of, you know, I like watched them race the pole and do those things, but
with qualifying,
but I'd never actually been to a complete like NASCAR sprint car series race.
He does like other races, but he hasn't thought about Formula One. I get it, man. A lot of times they're in, you know, Monaco and Bahrain and all these other places. That'd be tough to do, but there is a lot of American races now with the one down in Texas and Vegas and Miami. So there are opportunities, Drew. But of course, he says getting a license tough. But I was curious because you know he wants to drive one of those cars.
Yeah, and I think Kyle's right. And this is no shot at the FIA. Not that it matters, and not that they care what I think, but they don't like American drivers that much. I think that's pretty plain and simple. Our reputation to them is not very good. Whether it be the actual driver side of things or whether it be the ownership side of things or whatever the case is, you know, I think that they have a preference, and we're not that, and American drivers are not that preference, I guess is the best way that I can put it, which is where, look, IndyCar is doing very well. NASCAR this past Sunday outdrew F1 in Miami, and they were in Texas in terms of viewership, and F1 was on ABC. So, I mean, NASCAR is doing pretty good now. You know, people criticize it a lot for some of the racing that we see and all of that, but there's always things that people can fix. It's almost like the same with people complaining about the small little things, even though they don't matter that much.
Have you ever missed a race since you've been here?
No.
I didn't think so.
I've gone and I've hung out.
I didn't think so.
If I can go on Friday or Saturday, then I'll go on Friday or Saturday. This was going to come up yesterday, but I've got a college football itch, guys, and you guys are college football fans, so I feel like this is the perfect time to scratch that itch a little bit. So Greg McElroy, former Alabama quarterback, does a great job of calling games for ESPN, came up with his
Dust Dog.
We're coming up with the, you know, the top 25 lists, the way too early is this, the top quarterbacks, this and that. Greg McElroy ranked the top 25 coaches, and Logan, you're not going to be too happy with this list based on your fandom. I'm not mad because I know that Luke Fickell's not a top 25 coach in college football right now. But
he was at the Natty.
All three local schools, Drinkwitz, Kleiman, and Leipold, were all included in Greg McElroy's top 25. And I think there's a case that you could maybe even argue some of these guys deserve to be bumped up a couple of spots based on where they're ranked. But Greg McElroy has Lance Leipold at 17, Coach Drinkwitz at Mizzou at 15, and then Coach Kleiman at 14. Again, this is the top 25 coaches in college football. I don't know if you guys agree with this list. If you don't, if you think this should be higher, I know you think Kirk Ferentz should be in the top 25. I agree with that, Logan. You were also mad that Matt Campbell was included in there. Obviously, Iowa State. You know,
yeah, this list sucks. Mm. This list is awful. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, Greg. Deion Sanders at 22. But the dean of college football is not on the list. Okay,
we'll see what Deion does. Deion did bring a program back from the dead.
Yeah, but Kirk Ferentz, to Logan's point, there have been few programs, and I think Iowa fits in the same category as Kansas State in terms of its consistent relevance in college football. Iowa, when's the last time Iowa was actually irrelevant in college football? Some might think they are based on how they play offense, but if you look at how they play against the best teams and in terms of their record, they are one of the most consistent college football teams in the country.
Iowa hasn't had a losing record since 2012. They have been to a bowl game every single year since 2013.
And that's one of the few losing seasons they've had with Kirk Ferentz.
But is it someone to put you over the hump? That's the question. He deserves to be in there. He's always good.
Yeah, but
he's taken
him to four BCS bowl games.
In fairness, Bink, is Matt Campbell somebody that's going to put Iowa State over the hump? He's a really good coach,
When they hired him out of Toledo, I was like, okay, this is going to be the dude.
That's because you love the...
Well, he's turning out NFL players, too. I mean, Brock Purdy there. This year, Jalen Noel from Park Hill that got drafted by the Texans. Wiggins got drafted to the Texans as well. He's turning out NFL talent.
That's because you're a Mac guy. Logan and I are Big Ten guys. You're a Mac guy because you like Jason Candle out of Toledo right now as well.
I do like him.
Just so happens that he's also a Toledo coach.
I like Pinkel.
You have something for Toledo.
I cannot.
All time winning coach, Pinkel.
I cannot look at this. Dion at 22. Lincoln Riley at number 19. Fresh off of USC's 7-6 season. How highly impressive that is. I can't wrap my brain around it. Brett Bielema is at number 16 on this list. I like Brett Bielema, and Bielema's a top 25 coach. But yes, him being on the list and Kirk Ferentz not on the list irritates me to no end.
I think that's a good point.
I'm not saying that the Kirk Ferentz should be in the top 10. Iowa is, and somebody in the text line said, Iowa is constantly mediocre. Mediocre, I don't think you understand what the definition of that is. Mediocre would be 6-6. He is not a 6-6 head coach.
He has two double-digit win seasons in the last 4 years. If you think that Matt Campbell is an outstanding coach to this texture, Matt Campbell has one double-digit win season at Iowa State, and that was last season.
He's got 8 double-digit win seasons in his career since he took over the program in 1999.
Evan Caleb DeVore, three of those
in the last 6 years. He's mediocre, super mediocre. Right. Yeah. I mean, Kalen DeBoer at 6.
That's home cooking right there.
Has he proven it at Alabama yet, no. Greg?
I think that as far as the locals,
he had a good year at Washington.
He's got Jeff Brohm at 8.
Yeah. I think Jeff Brohm is, he's not necessarily overrated as
friend
a coach
of the show,
but,
Jeff Brohm.
On this list, Bink, he's not the 8th best coach.
I need to breathe a minute.
Dan Lanning is 5. And here's the one thing about Lanning. I actually could see him like down the line, like with the Kansas City Chiefs, to be honest with you. He loves the Chiefs.
He doesn't want to go to the NFL.
I know, but he can always be convinced. And the NFL is very much like college football now with free agency and the transfer portal. It's never been closer to the NFL than the way it is now. But first job was Park Hill South. Guy loves Kansas City. I don't know. Keep an eye on Dan Lanning, but Kirby Smart absolutely deserves to be number one. Dude always wins, and he's always good.
In terms of the locals, Bink, 17 for Leipold, 15 for Drinkwitz, and Kleiman at 14. Would you make any changes to where they're at? Do you think any of them should be bumped up a little bit higher on the
Brian
list?
Kelly being 9th, I think, is a joke.
I think Brian Kelly's a little bit high at 9, but I think you can make a case for all three of them to be a little bit higher on the list, but in particular, and I don't want to take Mizzou out of this equation, but I think that Coach Kleiman and Coach Leipold could be a little bit higher on the list because of the resources that they have compared to that of a Missouri or an LSU or some of these other schools. Like, obviously, they're not going to be in the top 5, I don't think. I mean, if K-State were to go and win the Big 12 and go on to win a college football playoff game, then maybe Coach Kleiman actually climbs his way into that top 10 and maybe even flirts with the top 5 a little bit. But for what Coach Leipold has done so far, even though they had an off year last year, and what Coach Kleiman has done to continue the consistency at K-State, it feels like they don't get the proper recognition that they do because of what their records are. If you look at the lack of resources, are we sure, Bink, that Coach Drinkwitz, I think he would be, but are we sure that Brian Kelly, if he was coaching Kansas last year, are we sure that he is any better than what Lance Leipold has been since he got to Kansas?
I don't think so. They've already gone with sizzle and flash before. This is the right hire for the University of Kansas. There was some things out here. Like, where was Spencer Danielson? He took freaking Boise State to the playoffs. That deserves to be on a list. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree.
You take Boise State and you almost had the Heisman Trophy winner.
I agree to some extent because you get the Group of Five gets an automatic bid now. So not that he needs to be taken off the list because
in a home game.
But the fact that he had them in the top 8 at one point in the country is something that obviously is no slouch. I do think John Summerall deserves to be on the list. Former Troy coach, Tulane did a fantastic job.
And in Drinkwitz's defense, he's the only one of the coaches. He would have made the playoffs in the new format the year before when he went down to beat Ohio State, down in Texas in the bowl game. He would have been in the playoffs that year.
Which I think that makes this year. I'm so pumped up for college football. If you haven't tuned into the 249 Miles of College Football podcast, shameless plug, we're going to come out with a new episode next week. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. We haven't had an episode in a couple weeks now. There's a lot to break down regarding some of the recruiting stuff, which Coach Leipold, by the way, Bink, he's doing a nice job in the portal.
He's done a great job in the portal.
I think Lance, people are, I'm really interested for this season because there are Kansas State fans that are putting some pressure on Chris Klieman, think that he needs to be better than he is. Avery Johnson is got a full season as a starter under his belt. How good could he be?
That's the Will Howard syndrome.
Could he elevate himself, Bink, into that top category of quarterbacks where he could come out in the draft? Obviously, Jalen Daniels coming back with Kansas. Can they bounce back with a good schedule? Missouri, very similar schedule, Bink, as they had last year. Almost identical outside of the non-conference opponents. But the quarterback question, is it Pibula? Is it Horn? Who's it going to be
exactly? He's a stud. He was a stud at Penn State. We'll see how he's going
to
do.
I'm very excited to see how those things go for the locals. And then, of course, Missouri State is in the FBS. We'll see how they do. They're not bowl eligible because of the dumb rules that the NCAA has. Yeah.
They won't make a bowl game. They won't make a bowl game anyway.
In fairness, we saw it with some of these other schools that have moved
up. There's finally two FBS teams in the state.
I'm not. Never saying never.
I'm excited for the Bears. I am. And I think that they can get there at some point. Ryan Beard, the head coach at Missouri State, great guy. I got to develop a relationship with him during my time in Springfield. He's the right guy to lead this program.
Not Petrino.
But to go from the Missouri Valley to Conference USA, and they were a ho-hum average team. You know, they hovered around 500 every year in the Valley. They had a better year this year than they did the previous year. Mm. But
you're saying it might be more like a Sam Houston situation where they go 3-9.
I hope they win a game or two in Conference USA this year. Yeah, I mean, look, their non-conference schedule is impossible.
USC on the road, Marshall on the road, and then they host SMU.
Yeah,
and then they host UT Martin.
Yeah,
they better win that game.
They better win that game against UT Martin.
How about they still want Bobby Petrino, who is their offensive coordinator?
Can we stop talking about Bobby Petrino?
I'm just saying, how bad they want him to be the head coach there, though.
They don't.
Guess what? He's not the coach, though, Bink. So
I know he's
at Arkansas.
Bobby Petrino can't stay anywhere longer than 5 minutes. Quite literally, he was the head coach. He was the offensive coordinator at UNLV for like 3 months.
Yeah.
Like long enough to buy a house.
Well, don't forget the Falcons. And then Jimbo, the team a note
Jimbo
left.
Fisher gave him a call and was like, hey, can you come be the OC at Texas Tech? And he's like, sure. He was at Texas Tech for a year. Everybody got fired. Now he's back at Arkansas waiting for Arkansas to ultimately fire their guy so we can try to get back into the head coaching job. I got to do this. I got to get this off my chest. Mizzou fans aren't going to like this. Okay, we're talking about this list. Eli Drinkwitz is the number 15 coach in college football according to this list. So I just want to, I just want to throw a number out there for everybody. A couple numbers. So since 2020, when Eli Drinkwitz took over the Mizzou program, right? He's 38-24. He's 22-20 in the SEC in the last 5 years since he took over at Mizzou. In that same 5 year stretch, Kirk Ferentz at the University of Iowa is 36-20, and he's 29-13 in the Big Ten.
I think there's some recency bias.
He's got a better record over the last 5 years.
I think there's a case there. I think it also is recency bias, where I know that Iowa.
Of course, it is. Dion's in here.
Nasty work.
Somebody asked where Mario Cristobal was there. He is 20th on the list. Behind him to again do top 25. Behind him at. After 20 is Kalani Sitake,
Dion. He couldn't win with Cam Ward.
Kurt Cignetti at 23, Rhett Lashley at 24, and then Kenny Dillingham at 25. I mean, it's hard to make a case that any of these guys should not be in the top 25. So where does Kirk Ferentz fill? But I think that Kirk Ferentz should also, you think Kirk Ferentz, he should be in the top 25 as well.
This list is crazy to me.
Maybe you take out Kalani Sitake.
There's five Big Ten coaches on this list. Top 25 coaches in America, only five of them are from the Big Ten. And those five include Lincoln Riley from USC, Brett Bielema at Illinois, and then the other three I have no problem with. James Franklin at Penn State, you've got Dan Lanning at Oregon, and Ryan Day at Ohio State.
I think Lincoln Riley's the one where you could say he hasn't been top 25 the last couple of seasons because it's just kind of been underwhelming what he's been delivering with his programs. I understand the Brett Bielema stuff. I mean, Bink, I don't know if you've seen this.
They're going to be good this year, actually.
Oh, Kurt Cignetti's on the list as well. Yeah. I'm sorry, six. Kurt Cignetti out of Indiana with one good year at Indiana under his belt on the list.
I was going to say, Bink, I don't know if you've seen this either, Logan. Illinois might be really, 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 really good this year.
I think they're going to be good. I think this, a couple years ago they had one of the best defenses no way talked about in the country, but this year they'll be good.
Give Illinois a lot of credit. And I'm a Brett Bielema guy.
I hate saying that because I hate Illinois.
Altmyer's coming back?
Yeah. I'm a Brett Bielema guy, in case you guys just, you know, for
former Wisconsin guy. I wish they had Arkansas. Him at,
well, yeah, yeah, he was. Do you know where he played college football, Drew? Do you know where Brett Bielema played college football?
No.
I'll give you a hint. He's got it tattooed on his calf. Look up Brett Bielema calf tattoo. Why don't you answer that one for me real quick?
Do you know where the head coach of Arkansas went to played college football? Sam Pittman?
I do not.
Pitt State.
I mean, is it Northwest Missouri State?
Pitt
Let
State.
Me see here.
No,
it
Brett
is.
Bielema.
Iowa.
Yeah, Brett Bielema played football at the University of Iowa. He's got a Tiger Hawk tattooed on his leg.
He's a Big Ten guy. I mean, the only mistake he made was going to Arkansas.
That's true. He never should have left Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, Wisconsin should have never got rid of Paul Christ either, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, they thought Paul Chris was going to be Brett Bielema, and he wasn't quite Brett Bielema.
Wisconsin's going to run the ball more, though, so I think we're excited about that.
Sure.
I am so pumped up, though, about college football this year, though, Ben, because K-State's going to be in the running. KU could bounce back. Mizzou, theoretically, should be in the run to at least get a good bowl game, at the very least, if not contend for the playoff. But obviously, the SEC is the SEC, so makes it tough.
Also, Willie Fritz, by the way, played at Pitt State, too.
He's turning around the Houston program.
Head coach Houston.
Okay.
Got a couple Pitt State guys in college football. Good stuff, Drew. I can't wait for your podcast. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we are back at it.
So you're back at it every week now?
Not every,
every
week.
Couple weeks.
Every couple weeks. And then once we hit June, that's when we're going to really get into the conference previews. I got my college football preview coming out in August. So,
which, by the way, you put a lot of time in this because you look at every single Division I team.
All 130,
he puts a sheet out. He should sell this.
All 136 teams get 2 pages in my preview. It's over 280 pages.
He should monetize this.
Who needs Phil
it's
Steele?
It's a lot of work.
Who needs Phil Steele when we got Drew Nixon?
I'm no Phil Steele. I love Phil Steele.
His guide's coming out in about a month. That. I don't know about you, Logan, but I go out every June and buy college football mags. I know I could look it up and look online, stuff like that, but there's nothing better than having a hard copy.
Oh, 100%.
College football magazine.
True.
I even had Drew's last year. Drew even afforded me the file for it.
Yeah, it was free
he
last year.
Put a lot of work in for free.
Yep. Nice. Well, we'll have to see if things change this year, but yeah.
Oh, they do. Come up next, though. Chiefs Red Half Hour.
With Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5. The Fan.
Welcome back. Chiefs Red Half Hour. Jay Binkley, Logan Weber. Drew Nixon producing the operation. Man, I love the words Chiefs Red Half Hour. I've said this all week. I'll say it again tomorrow, Logan. Can't wait for that. But the Kansas City Chiefs, I know we've talked a little Chiefs. When can you talk Chiefs? You can talk Chiefs anytime you want because the NFL is a 12-month-a-year
thing. It works 365, 100%.
It really does. But as far as the offseason program, they're now in phase two for the Kansas City Chiefs. The national media, I think they get directives, right? Pick against the Chiefs and make a good case of why not. Because that has to happen, right, Logan? I mean, they're not naturally thinking that, are they? I mean, these guys know football. They're not naturally wanting to crap on the Chiefs, are they?
Not most of them, no. I mean, there are people out there, right? And I'll give respect to those who pick against the Kansas City Chiefs for, you know, reasonable reasons. Like Mark Schlereth, right, on Fox Sports, right?
He hates the Chiefs.
Breakfast Ball on you know, weekday mornings. He's a Broncos guy. His hatred for the Chiefs is well-founded. But for others who hate the Chiefs just because the Chiefs win, or whatever reason you might have, I don't have respect for your opinion. And there are going to be folks in the national media who are going to pick against the Kansas City Chiefs. Number one, because it doesn't make for interesting television nationally for everybody to just be like, oh yeah, the Chiefs are the best team in football and say that every show's over, right? You've got to have a cause for debate or discourse. And so there are going to be people that, hey, peel back the curtain, go a little inside baseball. Sometimes people don't always say things that they mean to try to drum up a conversation or produce entertainment value, unless you're Skip Bayless, who's just a downright moron and says things to say things. I think that there are people that are going to pick against the Kansas City Chiefs because they reasonably believe that, or they can't stand the Chiefs, or there's going to be plenty of people out there that are going to do it because they think it's going to cause some sort of a rift.
Or be like Colin Cowherd, that'll be pro and con. He'll be for them and then against them, then back for them at some point.
Yeah. What did you guys see? There's a list on from ESPN, every remaining hole for each NFL team. And the position they put was left guard.
That's understandable. We got to replace Tooney.
I know, but Bink, I don't think they've listened to what Brett Veach and Andy Reid have said. Because throughout this entire offseason, they have said it'll be a competition at left guard between Kingsley and Caliendo. That's what they've said. And Brett Veach has mentioned they like Kingsley at left guard. So I understand that you need to replace the guy, but this is all, if you've listened to what Andy Reid and Brett Veach have said, they've suggested multiple times that this is going to be a competition, and it's going to be between Kingsley and it's going to be between Caliendo to see who gets that spot based on things that they've said about Kingsley and just in regards to the position itself. Where, I mean, if there's another position of need, I don't know if you need to necessarily fill a hole, but, you know, looking at other positions, I wonder if there are not bigger needs necessarily that stand out, but going forward, is there anything that they haven't addressed that they should, that you think?
I think the left side of the line remains the biggest question mark, obviously.
You can say it's
Jalen Moore coming in from Frisco, the five starts behind Trent Williams, but you still have question marks, and you should have question marks about that. And I always thought replacing Tooney, easier said than done.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's an all-pro for a reason.
Of course.
The guy's considered the left best guard. Now, he did struggle once he got to the Super Bowl playing left tackle because his arms are short. He's a guard.
Yeah,
that's what
absolutely.
He is. And he's been playing out of position. He did well against other teams until you got to that elite front of Philadelphia. He was good until then. But still, you're replacing the left side. So you should be concerned about that because you can't just say, you know, immediate fix is drafting Josh Simmons. He's got the injury. Not 100%. You can't just pencil him in right now. Jalen Moore, there's justification. There's reason for him to be good. Former fifth-round pick out of Western Michigan, a big opportunity for him to be good and get paid in the NFL.
Yeah.
So you're once again getting guys with good reason to be good. And Kingsley, who knows? People were real high on him at tackle last year. I was skeptical about it. The second round, I think, was good for him. Definitely not first round. I think that would have been a waste had they done Kingsley. And you clearly saw him on some mocks last year going in the first round of the Chiefs, which I think would have been a mistake for the Chiefs to do that. But yeah, left side of the line is a question mark and should be because a lot of the team is the same. Your tight end, still Kelce. Your backfield at this point, probably still going to be Pacheco and Hunt, even though you'll see some Rashard Smith at times, which I think is an upgrade. But I liked P. Ryan and what he did for the Chiefs, to be honest with you. But didn't get the job done, but they did get the Super Bowl and they did win 15 games. So there's going to be, and guys are a year older, mm-hmm. which in the NFL, that does matter. So, yeah, I think the left side of the line is the biggest question mark. You think you got answers, but we're not going to be sure until they actually play games.
I mean, you could say the same thing about D tackle, though. Like, we don't know about Omar Norman Lott. Like, you lose Turk Wharton, who had 8 sacks last year.
And Derek Nnadi.
Yeah, and here's Turk Wharton, the guy that was undrafted at Missouri S&T. You know what I'm saying? Things happen.
I understand that you might think that the position isn't good, but in terms of the big of a whole, the Chiefs, I think, believe full-on, they full-on believe that it's going to be, that they like Kingsley at the spot, and they think they have the answer. I don't think any of us think that he can, one, we don't know, but two, based on what we saw last year, they don't have a guard that's got that's the caliber of Joe Tooney, obviously. But does that mean that the hole isn't filled? Like, if we've heard what the Chiefs have said, I don't think that
just because there's a guy, I don't think it's filled, Drew.
I don't know if that's the biggest hole necessarily, because there's other positions you can pinpoint to that they've addressed, but you could also argue there's nobody, like, who's replacing Turk Wharton? We still don't know if it's Omar Norman Lott. You'd like it to be because they picked him in the second round, but that, I mean, Jaden Hicks is supposed to fill the read of the void of Justin Reed. It's supposed to, like, you think it's filled, but is that actually filled? Like, or cornerback too. Like, we think it could be Noah Williams or Christian Fulton. If Noah Williams is ready to go, they picked him in the third round. I think it's only a conversation just because it's Joe Tooney they're replacing as opposed to somebody else. But you can make a case. I think defensive line, interior defensive line is, I mean, if they struggle against the run, all of a sudden in the interior, that was their strong suit last year. So, I mean,
no 100-yard rushers except for a guy that was a quarterback, Lamar Jackson, that had 122. That was it.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's actually their biggest hole. Like, it looks that way, but based on what the Chiefs have said, it doesn't sound like they believe that left guard is a hole that needs to be filled. They believe it's a hole, I guess, that needs to be filled, and it's going to get filled by Kingsley or it's going to get filled by Caliendo, and they're content with that because they haven't done anything to address that interior offensive line position like that.
One thing on the defensive line they did do is they went heavily after guys that get to the quarterback. Norman Lott's win rate, I mean, even limited snaps, was the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Gelati had more pressures than anybody in college football. I mean, there's a reason why they selected who they did, because they can get to the quarterback, because they went to 18th last year in sacks. They were number two in the NFL the two previous seasons, so they obviously see the value in that. That's something that they want to do. But, yeah, just to expect the offense, they did struggle at times. Yes, they won games, a lot of one-score games. They did win them, but they had to be perfect down the stretch to do that. But you're expecting health. You're expecting Hollywood Brown to be healthy. And Hollywood Brown doesn't exactly put together full seasons. He never has. It's not what he does. He's oftentimes out. Rashee Rice is going to miss games. We know that from the suspension. So then can you deal with an injury? So is Jalen Royals the whole answer for that? I still have my question marks at wide receiver, even though on paper they look very good.
I'll answer for this. They put it as position, like they phrase it position of need as left guard. A position of unproven left guard, position of need, no. I'm sort of in the same boat that you're in, Drew. Honestly, if there was a position of need, a position that the Chiefs could go look at a free agent or a trade possibility to try to answer a question, I still think it's running back. I don't like what the Chiefs did this offseason at running back. I don't like it at all. Re-sign Kareem Hunt, I guess. I don't think Isaiah Pacheco is your guy. I don't think he's your answer. I don't think he is a perennial 1,000-yard rusher, which I think you need in today's NFL. Even though the Chiefs don't like to run the football a whole lot, that's not Andy Reid's philosophy. I get it. I just, with the two high safety looks, teams are going to have a competent running game. And I don't think Isaiah Pacheco is a 1,000-yard rusher. He doesn't exhibit a ton of vision. He's coming off the injury issue, right? He's not the most powerful runner in short yardage situations. Kareem Hunt is on the other side of 30. He's a short yardage back. Breshard Smith is a gadget guy out of the backfield. And unless he can prove otherwise, I don't like at all what the Chiefs did at the running back position this year.
It's not true for three down back that you drafted. You drafted somebody in the seventh round.
No, you haven't had one since Kareem Hunt was here the first time.
And this was a draft to do it because this was the best class. Chiefs even said that. It's the best class is the running back class. And I agreed with Drew and Rob. They did a segment yesterday where they talked about the success of seventh round running backs. Like Pacheco's on that list because he's over 900-yard rusher. But seventh round running backs traditionally haven't been very good. But the problem is, seventh rounders this year probably going fifth round in years before. I agreed with Rob on that. Seventh rounders this year probably going the fifth round in before. You can get undrafted guys, you know, that have had success in the NFL. This year was different. It was a loaded class. We'll see what they do. I'm just saying you have to find that explosiveness, and you have to count on injuries. They've been lucky across that offensive line.
They've been
lucky across that. And not only that, give Patrick Mahomes the time. Give him the time where he's not worried about being planted on the ground and he can deliver the football downfield. Being a running back for the Chiefs should be a luxury because early on with Mahomes, you're not seeing eight-man boxes. You're not. You're seeing guys back up, too high safety. Look, you're creeping up now when the Chiefs aren't throwing deep because 2 years ago they didn't throw deep at all. Last year a little bit more, but they haven't the last couple of years. They've been inside a 10-yard box.
That's because they were seeing two deep safeties 70%+ of the time.
A good running game supplants that, and so teams, if they do that, then start creeping up to stop the run because they respect it, opens up things down the field for Patrick Mahomes.
But we know that, because I think last year, at least Alex and Cody and I, we were, I'm sure you guys felt the same way, we were like saying it till we were blue in the face, like they need to run the football just a little bit more. Like they just don't, that's just not what Andy Reid does. And
well, Kareem Hunt did lead the NFL in rushing, so they did run a lot that year.
I know, but how long ago was that?
It was rookie year.
I mean, things changed.
So like, been, what, 17?
Yeah, I mean, that was 8 years ago, Bank.
I'm just saying they have done it.
I just think that based on what we've seen in the last 3 to 5 years, it has been a pass-heavy offense, and they don't utilize the run enough. And to your point, Logan, I don't know if they have a running back where they can utilize that in a effective nature where, to your point, Banky, they use the run to help set up things a little bit more down the field. That's just not what they do.
You don't want to be predictable either. Third and one, here comes Kareem Hunt.
Well, of course,
you know,
not.
Third long, Rashard Smith's in the game. You don't want to be predictable in what you do.
And in fairness, though, if you need to get 1 yard and you're running, you should be able to get 1 yard. And we talk about the short yard situations and the problems that they've had over the years.
But they won't do it because Mahomes' knee.
I know. It's not even the sneak thing. If you're going to run, if you're running the ball with Kareem Hunt, like a running back dive, like playing Madden, right up the middle, you should be able to get a yard.
With I understand this stuff line, happens,
but
behind Humphrey and Trey Smith, you should be able to.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's no excuse for them to be on a 3rd-and-1 and not be able to get that 1 yard.
They utilize the tush push, just not at the line of scrimmage with the quarterback. It's beyond that.
Because I think Rashard Smith is fine and can contribute, but I get people's frustration where you see a running back that could be available earlier on, like a Dylan Sampson was a popular pick for everybody here. Obviously, the local guys with Devin Neal and DJ Giddens. But you see a back that could be effective and a home run hitter, RJ Harvey type of guy. I think Rashard Smith could potentially be that guy, but you would have liked maybe the Chiefs to get somebody that had a higher ceiling like a Dylan Sampson or an RJ Harvey earlier on. But again, it's hard to knock anything that the Chiefs do based on what we've seen over the last 3 to 5 years.
Because results speak for themselves.
Exactly. It's really hard to go against anything that they've done, even if it might not be as appealing to the eye for any of us.
But you got
to
constantly evolve, and at some point, Patrick Mahomes will be 30 years old this season. Not the beginning, but his birthday, October, something like that, I think he turns 30. But that's your best weapon, and you'll never have a quarterback of that ilk, probably in my lifetime. Or yours as well, Logan. You're probably not going to see a quarterback with this ilk.
No.
And so you supply him with talent. Give him protection on the line. Look at what Washington's doing with Jaden Daniels. It is ridiculous what they've done on their offensive line and what they're doing at skill positions to help out the quarterback, because they realize we're going to be good because of this quarterback. And so that's what they're doing to fulfill the needs.
Yeah, I agree. But you can't become so completely one-dimensional. I mean, I got people in the text line. The Chiefs are the running game in Kansas City is never going to be a thing. They ran the ball 450 times last year. The running game exists in some respect.
It takes pressure off your quarterback, so that
it
does
should
help
be more of a thing than what it has been. I think
I'm not asking for Derrick Henry or say I'm not asking for a guy to rush for 1,500 yards on 350 carries for this Chiefs team. I'm asking for a guy that can rush for 1,100 yards on 230 carries, just to take some of the pressure off. Just to make a 1st-and-10 turn into a 2nd-and-5 instead of a 2nd-and-8, and now you have to throw the football on 2nd and 3rd down. I just make the team a little bit less predictable and put you in a little bit fewer 2nd and 3rd-and-long situations by having a guy that you can rely on in 3-down sets.
But as far as having the national media pick against Chiefs, I'm with you, though, Logan. If you have a good excuse, if you have a good reason, but picking against the team that goes to 7 straight AFC title games, it's tough to do. It's hard to make that prediction and sound, you know, like you know what you're talking about. And Kyle Brandt even said at the NFL Network, he's like, I'm done picking against the Chiefs. I'm done. You know, I've done there. I've been there. I've picked against them. And they just keep doing it.
Yeah, until somebody can prove that it can be done, until somebody proves that the Chiefs can't get to an AFC championship game, why wouldn't you just continue to pick them to get to an AFC championship game?
You're from the show me state, so am I.
Show
me you can do it. For Logan Weber, for Drew Nixon, big thanks to Kyle Larson joining us at 11 o'clock. He's throwing out the first pitch at the Royals game today. Josh Vernier comes your way next, the best insider in professional baseball. Vern comes your way next. And, of course, Logan and I be back with Drew tomorrow to talk about everything Chiefs-Royals and a little NASCAR this weekend.